Good morning. I am Pat Embers, a member of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. We have both ministerial and lay-led services here. And for the latter, we have members, friends, or guests of the fellowship speak on a variety of topics from their professional or personal experience. We have no required creed here. We believe in the liberal ideal that each person find his or her own path, whether it is working towards inner peace, particular social justice goals, or other religious or spiritual destinations. And so I welcome you, whatever path you brought here, and I ask you to join us today with an open heart and an open mind, and I greet you with the same. I extend a warm welcome to our visitors and guests. We invite you to sign our guest book at the welcome table in the narthex or lobby. On that page, you can request a complimentary subscription to our monthly newsletter, and there are newsletters you may take home on that welcome table. For more information, I encourage you to talk with people after the service. Everyone is invited to join us at that time for coffee in the hallway or narthex behind you. And if you are a visitor or relatively new to coming here and would like to introduce yourself, please feel welcome to do so at this time. Okay. All right. We're all well acquainted here. Okay. I draw your attention to the announcements printed in the order of service. There are one additional announcement that was handed to me. The Manhattan Alliance for Peace and Justice will present a discussion of racial profiling on Thursday, November 13th at the Congregational Church. John Extell will lead the discussion and will include studies that include racial problems in Riley County. The potluck is at 6:30. The program is at 7:15. More information on MAPJ newsletter on the Fair Trade Table in the narthex, and I believe you could talk to Ann Cowan if you wanted more information. May our chalice lighting this morning remind us of what this flame represents for us at UU. May the light of truth illumine our minds. May the spark of love set our hearts on fire. May the flame of freedom burn brightly within us now and always. And I thank Iris Gingery for being our chalice lighter this morning. No match. Okay. Come into this place of peace and let its silence heal your spirits. Come into this place of memory and let its history warm your soul. Come into this place of prophecy and power and let its vision change your heart. But nothing's on fire yet. Every second Sunday, we dedicate a helping hands offering to a nonprofit beneficiary in our local area. Today, we dedicate our offering to UFM Community Learning Center, UFM meaning University for Mankind. I personally have had a long time relationship with UFM in not only learning and teaching classes, but a historical experience of co-starting a free university with the help and vitality of the UFM personnel in one of the smallest towns in Kansas, Olsburg, which is 150 people, 25 miles north of here. It was very popular and fun to be learning hands-on blacksmithing, Swedish Oosterkaka cheesecake, and an oral history class on Olsburg that led to our 100th anniversary centennial celebration in 1980, the same year my daughter was born, 3 weeks earlier. It's really something. Anyway, there were so many good learning experiences taught by our friends, our neighbors, our guests, teachers. Everyone in our tiny town was very grateful we had what was called at that time a free university. I'm very happy to introduce UFM's Executive Director, Linda Tiener, who will give you a picture of UFM today. Linda?
Good morning. I'm actually here to talk about a specific UFM program. that is supported entirely through donations and grants that we're able to write, and it's called Project XL. This is a program that UFM has been hosting for 3 years now. What it does, it provides an opportunity for special needs adults in the area to have an opportunity to socialize and have some educational enrichment activities that they otherwise would not be able to have. The program is held on Saturday mornings in the K-State Union. Each student is given a K-State ID card. They go to classes and are treated as though they were K-State students, with courses taught by special education teachers or others from the community who are interested in providing some education to them. Each session is set up in 5 weeks, and in those 5 weeks, each student gets to choose one of five classes that they take. And classes might be things like reading enrichment, math skills, handling money, job preparation skills. It might be fitness and recreation. It might be health and wellness kinds of things. We use teachers that have sometimes taught for UFM, but also work in the school districts here, as well as some K-State students who are in the special education area and interested in learning more about how to work with that special population. This is a really cool program, and I wish you all could come and see it on Saturday mornings. In a place where education is so taken for granted, our students care so much to be there. They look forward to it all week. They call in between sessions to find out when we're going to have the brochures they can sign up for a class. And we have students that come as far away as Marysville and Greenleaf on Saturday mornings in order to get here. And that's over an hour drive just to get to K-State to take classes. We do 5 weeks of classes, and then we'll start a new session. And so in the course of a year, students who participate in our program can take as many as four different classes, make new friends, have an opportunity to get snacks at the union, sometimes go on tours around campus depending on what the class is, and really participate to the best extent they're able as K-State students. We often will bring in the K-State cheerleaders for a tailgate activity. During the spring, we have what we call a graduation ceremony, and oftentimes Willie is there to help pass out the certificates for participation for the year, and our students are very excited about that. When we started the program, we had 17 students coming on a weekly basis. We now have 62 that come every week, and the program continues to grow beyond our wildest imaginations for what could happen with it. So that's what I'm here for today, is to really just talk to you about Project XL. I could be happy to talk after the meeting about other things that UFM does, because we're involved in a wide variety of programs and activities in the community last year, touching the lives of over 17,000 people in Manhattan with the programs and activities that we're involved in. But Project XL is so special, and the only way we get funding to keep it alive is through donations, through some mini grants that I'm able to write, and the students each pay a small fee to participate in the classes each session. So with that, I will let you go. They told me I only had like 3 or 4 minutes, so I think I've covered everything that I wanted to say. I'll be around afterwards if you would like to visit with me more about this program or other UFM activities. Thanks so much for hosting us and sponsoring this special program.
Anna will now lead us in a group Vedic chant that is printed on the insert of your order of service bulletin. Please stand as you are able and join us in singing.
So give everybody a chance to get their piece of paper out if you need to look at it. I would prefer to do it in the Vedic tradition, where you just listen and repeat what you hear. So if you feel free to not look at the paper and just feel your voice vibrating. Oh. Atma. Atma hridaye. Hridayam mayi. Aham amrate. Aham amrate. Amritam. Anandam. Thank you. That was beautiful. How's that playing?
Thank you, Anna, and everyone. Now is the time in our order of service when we share those significant joys and concerns we carry in our hearts and minds. By sharing heavy burdens, they are lightened. By sharing joys, they grow. Do we have sharing to give?
I have two joys today. One is that I finally got down to see Stormy Kennedy at Claflin Books, which is now on 4th Street downtown, and it's a lovely store. And my other is that I went last night to the second monthly contra dance in Manhattan at the community center on 4th Street as well. So those are my two joys.
Diane Barker, I have a sorrow. My mother-in-law, Virginia Ross, passed on Friday.
I haven't been here for a long time, and because usually on Sundays, I have been at my grandma and grandpa's and my grandma's in places where my other cousins and my grandma and grandpas are. And I'm happy to be back.
All right.
This is Marissa Larson, and I just wanted to thank you all for the kind words and cards and support that you guys have all given us in the last, I guess, a little over a month since my dad passed away. I really appreciate it.
Some of you may be aware of this, others not. Dave Lambert's father passed away this weekend.
Stage fright.
Michael Oldfather, yesterday members, nine of us from here joined another maybe 18 or 19 members of choirs from up and down the I-70 corridor, UU choirs, to participate in the ordination and installation of Sarah Oglesby as the new minister in Topeka. And I just want to say, Tom Phillips, I wish he were here. You can tell him about this. But as a sort of Reformed Methodist, he leaned over to me during the service and he said, "There's quite a lot of liturgy and stuff going on here, isn't there?" And it's as close as we come in UU circles to having something that has ceremonial continuity pretty much wherever it is done. And so I would... and our singers did a great job. My counterparts from Lawrence and Shawnee Mission led the singers, and we had a great time. Slavomir played, blew the roof off the house.
Hi, I'm Karen Samuelson, and I grew up in this fellowship consider it home, and I decided to bring my mother, Phoebe, today. We decided, got the van wonderful. Arranged, so I thought it would be good for her to see some of the old gang. So.
Any more? I have one last announcement, and that is that my husband, Ken, left for Vietnam for 6 weeks on Friday, and he emailed me. He is there. He'll be starting some English as second language programs in the library learning centers there, especially in the one that he helped to start. So I will be with you all for the next 6 weeks and missing him, but we're in contact. We will now have our story for all ages. Children of all ages, no children, may come up and be with Anna this time.
Is that working? Hello, hello. Oh, does it? Okay. Hi. Is everybody here? Okay. So, I'm going to tell you about a very old tradition. and how many people know how long a century is? How long is a century?
100 years.
Thank you. So, how long would 50 of those be? Yes?
5,000.
Very good. Okay, thank you. So this is a tradition from 5,000 years ago. And in those days, they were still making up all kinds of traditions, right? Maybe it was new back then. But it's still being used today. And in this tradition called the Vedic tradition, they have... Is this coming through? They have a name for your breath. Now, I'm talking about the breath today because it has a lot to do with the ceremony that the adults are going to, or the program that the adults are going to hear later. But we all have breath, right? We have it from the time we're born for our whole life. It's like your best friend. It's like your life. Without breath, you're not alive, right? And so those Vedic teachers thought, well, breath is really important. Right? Without it, we're not alive. So we better respect it. And so they gave a name to our breath. And that name has two parts, the inhale part and the exhale part. And the inhale is called so. Exhale is called hum. So now we're going to just, if you could listen and repeat after me, we're going to call to the breath. Okay? Sounds like this. So hum. Can you do that? So hum. Okay. So in this Vedic tradition, we do a little bit of meditation. And this is a breath meditation which uses the voice to call to the breath and bring the mind's attention to the breath. So what we're going to do, we're going to chant So Hum just the way we did, and we're going to do three times. Each time we're going to get a little softer until we just do it really softly, and then we're going to do it three times silently, just in our minds, right? And as we mentally chant so, we'll be inhaling. As we mentally chant hum, we'll be exhaling. Does that make sense? Breathing in on so, breathing out on hum. Now, first we have to chant it, so we're not going to be breathing in on so when we're chanting, right? Because that would be impossible.
So.
No, not possible. Okay? So we'll sit up really straight. So the breath can really fill our whole body, right? And chant with me loud, soft, and softer. and then three times in our minds. And when we do it in our minds, we can close our eyes too, okay? So, so ha. Now you're meditating. Have a great time. Have a wonderful day. Go in love, our hearts go with you. Go in joy, our hopes go
for our offertory. We appreciate your gifts for our offering at this time. As mentioned before, this is our Helping Hands offering. If you wish your offering check to go to Helping Hands, address it to UUFM, not UFM. Our acronyms are very similar. I don't know how many times I've had to catch myself. So it goes to UUFM. If you wish your offering to go specifically to UUFM, and not Helping Hands beneficiary this morning, write in the memo line for UUFM. Cash offerings will go to the Helping Hands beneficiary.
Lost. Stand still. The trees ahead and bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here, and you must treat it as a powerful stranger, must ask permission to know it and be known. The forest breathes. Listen. It answers, I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back again, saying, here. No two trees are the same to raven. No two branches are the same to wren. If what a tree or a bush does is lost on you, you are surely lost. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you.
I'm going to make one little adjustment in our chalice before we go ahead.
I'm for it.
Today, we welcome fellowship member Anna Franklin as our speaker. Anna is founder, director, and instructor of Heart Space Yoga in Manhattan, Kansas. She is a longtime teacher of the art and science of yoga in the tradition of Patanjali. Her talk today is on sharing the Vedic tradition, where the physical meets the spiritual.
Thank you, Pat. Oh, beautiful. Thanks, Doug. Yeah, that looks great. So we're going to be talking a little bit about this model eventually.
And I don't have my talk memorized, so I'm going to be reading. Hope you'll forgive me. I'm not a very polished speaker. Okay, I'm happy to have the opportunity to talk to you this morning about a part of my personal experience and life's journey, and to explain a little of what I understand of the ancient teachings. Instead of modern science, I want to talk about ancient science. Humans have always been a curious species, and even 5,000 years ago, people wanted to understand the many mysteries of life, the universe, and everything. Please remember that the things I'm telling you are not originally my personal ideas, but have been around for thousands of years. Also, I'm not asking anyone to judge the truth of these ideas, but only to relax and enjoy the experience that I'm presenting to you. You all know now that yoga is the lens through which I perceive the world. The reason for this is that ever since I began to study yoga, about 40 years ago, each new level that I have reached seems to perfectly fit the previous one and what, you know, my experience of life. And all of my experiences with the study of yoga seem to support me in every level of my existence. So today I want to draw you a picture. I was going to draw the picture, but then we found this lovely one online, which is actually a little confusing compared to what I would have drawn, but it's okay. You'll figure it out. This is the Panchamaya Kosha, or the five bodies model. And it shows the five levels of existence according to the Vedic teachings. And it brings a lot of clarity to me, and I'm hoping that it will speak to some of you as well. This has helped me to make sense out of some of the mysteries in my life, and I'm not a scientist, and I don't know the answer to these mysteries. But for instance, just one for instance, and there are many like this. Very early on the morning of November 3rd, 2010, I awoke feeling as if I had been shaken. I knew immediately that today was a very special day and that I must not stick to my usual routine, but I must go straight to my mother's side as soon as possible. I knew for certain that she would die on this day. And if I waited until after my morning class, I would not have a chance to say goodbye to her. So, knowing this, I went right to her. I had a chance to hold her hand and whisper some words together. And she died peacefully within 20 minutes. I mean, the certainty that I felt that morning could be attributed to the fact that she was almost 100 years old, had just been in the hospital for a week, and was struggling, and everyone knew she was going to die. But I knew that it was that day, and I knew that it was that morning, and I knew that it was before 10 o'clock that morning that she would die. I knew that as soon as I woke up. So... many of you have probably had similar experiences, I don't know, but that's one of the mysteries for me. And one of the reasons that I keep looking to this word spiritual and wondering about what is it? What is it spiritual, right? So I think of spiritual as essence. Everything has essence, and that which makes it unique, its identity. Like, as a toddler, I used to love the smell of my parents' pillows because I guess it was related to security when I would crawl in bed with them in the morning. Certain smells and sounds can evoke a whole other time and place, and each of us
I'm sure, has had that experience, taking us into our past, even if just for a split second. But essence can't always be perceived and is somehow different from what we call matter. Another word for essence may be spirit. And I'm told that in some languages the word for spirit is the same as the word for breath. Another word might be vibration. You can't see it, but it moves you. I have that experience with I have a large bell in my studio, a bowl that I ring. And so this doesn't happen when I ring it, but sometimes in meditation when Bob Moore rings the bell and I'm sitting quietly with a straight back, I can feel my whole torso begin to spiral very gently. And it's an amazing feeling. Just from the ringing of the bell, the hearing of that sound does something within my body, which, of course, is two-thirds water, right? So vibration should move it. So essence is not physical, but does that make it spiritual? And what is meant by this word? So I want to talk about this. To begin with, about the word itself, spirituality. People have their interpretations and feelings about the meaning of this word, and mine have evolved as I move through my life trying to make sense of my own feelings regarding religion, dogma, superstition, and all those kinds of human phenomena, because they really are human. Animals don't have them, right? In order to talk about my spiritual journey, it is essential that I define for those listening my personal interpretation of this word. And most important to me is what has nothing to do with spirituality, such as dogma, blind belief, and superstition, right? To me, those things have nothing to do with spirituality. And I remember back when the word holistic with a W or holistic with an H began appearing in New Age Journal, I think, or something. And then there was the big Unity in Yoga conference at the same time. And I thought about this word holistic and all, and, you know, remember Dr. Bronner, all one philosophy, right? And be here now and all that stuff. The mantra of the time, peace, brothers and sisters, make love, not war, all those things are all part of my journey. But at that time, I was busy working as a travel agent. Although every morning I was practicing my asana and my pranayama, feeling the love at the center of my being, trying to find myself and all that kind of thing. So that's about all I want to say about that. So I want to talk now about this model that we have in front of us. And Doug asked me if I needed, we have the model, so I don't think I need a microphone, but I do feel like I need to move a little bit. Can you still hear me when I walk over here? Okay. So Anamaya is the food body. Okay. I don't really need to be over there. I know these. I don't have to look at the model. Anamaya is the food sheath or the food body. Pranamaya is the energy sheath or the energy body. Now, this is just a diagram. We don't have this disc inside of us with all these layers. This is just a diagram to explain. And one thing I want to point out, you've already read what these are, energy, discernment, and bliss, and so forth, is that of all these layers, only one of them can be seen and touched, can be sensed, is available to the senses. The others are much more subtle. I think that the Vedic teachers or the Vedic rishis, meditators, whatever, they perceived that there's a lot about me that you can't see. When you look at me, you can see my body, but you can't see what I'm thinking. You can't see my emotions and whether I'm a wise person or not. You can't tell that, whether I have discernment. And so this model sort of clears it up and says, okay, yes, you are mostly not visible. And that is an interesting thing because I always notice with my yoga students that, you know, they want to see everything, you know. They can't just close their eyes and listen to instructions and follow movements and that kind of thing. They want to see me do it, and you know, because they're attached to that. But what I've noticed, too, is that that attachment to being able to see or touch or hear or feel something, for it to be real to us, has taken us away from that ineffable part of ourselves, that part of ourselves that is truly pure. And that is just our pure awareness. And each one of us has that, just that pure awareness. It has nothing to do with good, bad, evil, or anything. It's just being in pure awareness and letting it, letting yourself feel it as just that, with no judgments of any kind. And to get to that place, the rishis made up all these different ways of meditating because everyone's a little bit different. So for people that are really oriented to vocal things and to hearing things, we have mantra meditation, right? And that's what I did with the kids. See, I wrote a little something. I don't know if it is worth anything, but I'll check it out here. Yeah, so the voice is basically the breath connecting to the body, to the vocal cords. So the breath is actually kind of, to me, that borderline that's both the physical and the non-physical. It's the breath. And the voice is a wonderful way of expressing that because that's the breath activating the physical body in a way that you can then hear. And the fact that you can then hear it draws the mind, the attention, to that sound of your own voice, which is uniquely yours, can help to bring your attention inside of yourself and draw your attention away from all that distracts you that's out there in the world. Because we're always, you know, being distracted by something that we hear or see, and especially by our thoughts about what we hear and we see. We have these thoughts that are constantly going. And so to slow all those thoughts down and take our attention away from all those distracting thoughts, we can use a mantra. And the word mantra actually means, man means mind, as in the manomaya. The manomaya kosha is the mental level, right? So mantra is a way of training the mind into one channel so that you're not distracted by anything else. So hum. And then as you repeat that and you think about how many times, a lot of times people will repeat it a certain number of times, like I had us do it 3 times. But you can choose the number, and by the awareness of the number of times and the sound, whether it's your actual voice or whether you're quiet and mental repeating it, will kind of wipe the slate clean or wipe the mind clean of everything for just a few moments. And that's all you need to really get in there and really feel that silence, that non-judgment, that true awareness that we all have. And the more often you practice getting in touch with that silence and that true awareness, the more clearly you see things. Because what happens then is that the constant judgment, which you know we all are doing all the time, right, of something as good, bad, or ugly, or whatever we're judging it as, it's hard to get rid of. It's almost impossible. It's just part of the way we think as human beings, right? And so we need to get out of our thoughts in order to get to that place of pure awareness. Okay. So according to the five-body model, the human system, the innermost body is the body of eternal knowing, or pure consciousness, or pure awareness, as I was just saying. When all five levels or bodies are integrated and communicating well, we have the ability to be aware of things that we would be unaware of otherwise. So what this is saying is basically when you can have a healthy body, that's the food body, so that it's not disturbing you in any way, right? When your breath is easy and you're not having trouble with breathing, and by the way, that supports the healthy body and the healthy body supports that, so you see how they all interact, then you can finally sit still, be comfortable in your healthy body, and now pay attention. However, when you have an unhealthy body, so this is why, this is yoga I'm talking about. Why do we do all this stuff with yoga? What does that have to do with the spirituality? We have to have a strong, healthy body in order not to be distracted so that we can find that quiet, that pure consciousness within us. So it's all supporting, all of these levels support each other. So when all five levels are integrated and communicating well, we have the ability to be aware of things that we would be unaware of otherwise. And this, I would say, is the experience that I have had, that I had on the day that my mother left her body. I just so happened to have been doing a good practice at the time. So I was fairly well integrated. I was not, you know, going off into worrying about something or getting distracted about my thoughts or letting people get me upset because I was practicing. And that's really what keeps me from that. When I'm not practicing, I know for sure, because I've had this experience, I'm a different person. So that's I think, what was happening. And since everything was all kind of tuned in and I was purely aware, whatever it was, I knew. I was able to know without any doubt that I had to go to my mom at that particular time. So that's after 40 years of practicing. I'm not saying that everybody can have that kind of awareness all the time. I sure can't. But as I say, I was practicing well at the time. And I was having to practice well because, you know, it's hard when you have someone that you love that's, you know, is on the way out. As many of you know, the word yoga means no separation. So this diagram shows lines between the different levels, but it's only a diagram and not reality. In reality, the levels permeate each other and support each other. I already said all that. Sorry. For instance, the physical body is supported by sleep and nutrition. Energy becomes depleted. Let's see. When energy is depleted, we can become listless and depressed and tired. And when we're depressed, we fail to care for ourselves and the physical body suffers. So it works both ways. So although depression is a mental state, it can be very much affected by the physical, as I'm sure you're all aware. How much time do I have? Okay, good. Good. The practice of yoga begins with the two branches known as yama and niyama. And yama, or the restraints and observances. So restraints and observances are basically things to steer away from and things to make a habit of. And those restraints and observances are there to support your being, our beings, at all levels. Respect for others, these are the yamas. Right communication, non-covetousness, moderation in actions, cleanliness, and contentment. Actually, those were both the yamas and the niyamas, so there's five of each. I should have written this larger, sorry. Balanced physical practices such as sleep, exercise, nutrition, self-observation or study. Oh, I'm still reading them because there's 10 of them. And acceptance of our own limitation. Interesting, there are 10 commandments too. So all these practices support our mental and physical well-being, which in turn allows us to thrive at all levels of our being and naturally has an impact in all our relationships. And I always think when I say that about the Native American, all our relations. So your relationship to the earth, your relationship to everything. The next branches of yoga are asana and pranayama, or pranayama. These are also known in English as body awareness exercises and breath awareness exercises. These support our ability to focus the mind in the present moment, because with a strong, flexible body, we're not distracted, and everything that I already said. So I apologize. I didn't go over this too carefully. The next branches of yoga are pratyahara, dharana, and dhyana. And these three are mental states. First, pratyahara is sensory withdrawal, meaning that you're just focusing on what you're doing. So as I'm reading this to you and thinking about what I'm reading to you, I'm not necessarily noticing, you know, who's in the room. I look around a little bit, but not much. That's the first one, pratyahara. Dharana is concentration. And the third, dhyana, is complete focus on one thing and one thing only. And when we can sit with a straight back, we're going to actually experience this in a few minutes, and breathe freely and stay quiet for at least 10 minutes. We're not going to do 10 minutes, but observing only the posture and the breath, we can begin to explore the inner world of meditation. We may find a refuge from the constant natterings of our habitual discursive mind. When we find with amazement that spaciousness within ourselves, there is now room for a whole new way of knowing and seeing ourselves and also the world around us. Yoga is the science of contentment, among other things. When the mind lets go of its constant grasping and judging, this is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong, you know, that we're always doing, right? And one's whole being can finally relax out of that. In this state, we begin to see the world as it truly is. Our lens becomes cleansed of the dross of our habitual mind. The final branch of yoga is samadhi. There are eight. I've been listing them here, but this is the eighth branch. Samadhi is the state of oneness or no separation, or the state of yoga, in other words. There's not much anyone can say about the state of samadhi. If you experience a state for a time, you may find that you're able to get along without the usual upsets in your life. People and circumstances don't worry you and prey on your mind. Samadhi is a state of non-separation, it does not mean that you don't feel sad when someone dies or happy when you see the beauty of life. It means that knowing that you will certainly lose everything and everyone that you love, and that you yourself will also die, has no negative influence on you. Knowing the truth of the world doesn't need to distract you from loving your life. It only makes you love it more. Remember Brock Dale speaking up here just a few weeks before he died? And he said, "I am filled with an unreasonable joy." I personally believe that Brock was in samadhi at that time. May we all strive to find this unreasonable joy, which I believe we all have within us at the very center of our beings. Okay, so I'm not doing this in the right order. but I'd like to do a little bit of mantra meditation with you. So we used the soham before. I'm just going to lead you, and I'll just stand here and lead you. I'm just going to ask you to, if possible, sit up on the very edge of your chair and have both your feet directly under your knees. And notice that now you have more support. Your pelvis is supported properly, and therefore your pelvis can support, you know, because everything supports something, right? Your pelvis now can support your whole torso. Yeah, and that makes it easier to sit up straight, which makes it easier to breathe. Okay, and we're just going to take some deep breaths. Actually, let's breathe in and raise the arm. Breathe out and lower the arms. Yeah, do that a couple times and match the length of the movement to the breath. So think about how long are you breathing? And how long is the exhale? Take your time. Yeah. Once more. Great. So sitting with a straight back, closing your eyes, taking a moment to notice how it feels to have a straight back. Notice whether your shoulders are hunched or whether you're relaxing them. Turn up the corners of your mouth just a little. Okay. So now I'm going to chant for you, and I want you to inhale with the so and exhale with the hum. Okay? So get ready for your inhale. So. Continue mentally. Shoulders relaxed, corners of the mouth turned up. Okay, thank you. Enjoy the silence for a moment, and I think there's time for sharing. If anybody wants to think about, ask about, comment about. Oh, was that the next thing on the list? Go ahead. while we're in a meditative state, we're going to listen to Mirka chant for us.
Self is everywhere, shining forth from all beings, vaster than the vast and sadder than the most subtle, unreachable yet nearer than the breath, than the heartbeat. Self is everywhere, shining forth from all beings, vaster than the vast, sadder than the most subtle, unreachable, yet near than the breath, than the heartbeat. Eyes cannot see it, ears cannot hear it, nor tongue utter it. Only in deep absorption can the mind, grown pure and silent, merge with the formless truth. Only in deep absorption can the mind, grown pure and silent, merge with the formless truth. She who finds it is free. She has found herself. She has solved the great riddle. Her heart forever is at peace. Her personal self returned to his radiance, intimate, deathless source. As rivers lose name and form when they disappear into the sea, the sage leaves behind all traces when she disappears into the light. Perceiving the truth, she becomes the truth. She passes beyond all sufferings, beyond death, and all the knots of her heart are loosed.
Still with me? In your old worlds? So, Pat, do we still have time, you think? Or do we? Yeah? Okay. So we can entertain comments or questions or sharing of experiences if anyone wants to at this time. Okay, Katie?
I'm not sure if this question is fully formed yet, but I'll do my best here. One thing that I really loved when I first began to do yoga, which is going on 20 years ago now, I can't believe that, was this idea of the self as something that you lovingly accept and come deeper and deeper closer into, rather than in some traditions which have ideas of denying the self or really moving beyond it in some, as though it's a negative thing.
Yeah.
And I wondered if you could speak a little bit to that in yoga. Although I know you have been, but
yeah, no. Yeah, denying the self, I mean, I think that when you're saying that, you're kind of thinking of the physical self, right? Denying ego. I see what you're saying. Okay. So having humility as denying ego. Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think yoga would say to something like that, it has to be a balance. You have life and you have death. You can't have one without the other. Okay, so you're a human being, you have an ego, you can't not have an ego. You can't not have hair on your head, right? Or, well, maybe you can. I tried not to. But, yeah. So it's, there are yogis that go very deeply into that do deny themselves, you know. There's different levels of that. You have the yogis that are really kind of like over the top yogis, right? They sleep in the what do they call it? The burning grounds, the funeral grounds, and they spread ashes on their bodies. They don't wear any clothes, and you know, they beg all their food, and basically they deny themselves a lot. And then you have someone like Krishnamacharya, my dad's teacher. When his father died, he gave up apples as a way of honoring his father. He and his father, they brought, you know, in South India they don't have apples, but the man from Kashmir would come down every few months with apples. And Krishnamacharya's father loved apples, so they would get apples, and they would both enjoy them. And so when his father died, he gave up apples. That's a different kind of thing. It's not really humility, but it's kind of respect, you know. That kind of denial is like an observance of something, you know. So I'll always remember, by not eating apples, the pleasure that I had when my father was alive. So, I don't know. I don't know where to go with it, you know, the self-denial. Larry has something.
One of the things that I've really appreciate about the kind of thing you're doing is this attempt or... maybe it's a method to some extent of feeling a kind of personal integration or wholeness.
Exactly. Personal integration.
Well,
those are the words.
There really are a lot of different routes to that. Yoga may well be a very effective one. Yeah. Just a couple of other routes, though, that I've experienced in my own life, not so much the yoga, but rather when I used to run a lot. There'd be times that I was running, and somehow or another, everything fit.
You had an experience of samadhi,
well,
perhaps.
And sometimes
some people have said that.
Sometimes in teaching physics, everything is clear in the area that I'm concerned with or helping the students with. And it's just not possible not to solve a problem, because all you're doing is what is the basis, the integrated...
That's exactly what I'm talking about. You're doing
the natural world here.
You're
natural
doing
law.
It. It's,
so
that's,
anyway... There are a lot of two points. There are a lot of ways to this situation,
yeah.
And this situation is worthwhile.
Yeah, that is really true. Thank you so much for that, Larry, because it really is true that you don't have to do some kind of fancy postures that you see in yoga books. or anything like that to necessarily reach that state of mind. And you're obviously, you have been there. And yeah, well, it's, yeah. I mean, if you're there all the time, then, you know, you have a halo and you're going to be taken up or something, you know. But yeah, that was a really great description that Larry gave of samadhi or the state of yoga. And we've all, you know, many people have experienced it doing their various different things. Running, I hear it all the time from runners. The only thing about the runners is they experience it, but then they experience pain in their muscles. So then they come to me, and I help them to take care of the pain in the muscles. But while you're in that state, you're not going to notice the pain in the muscles. Yeah, that's true. Yes.
Good morning, Anna.
Hi,
could you
Chris.
Just comment or give your thoughts on mindfulness meditation as advised by your experience?
Well, that's all we've been talking about this morning, so mindfulness, well, there, you know, some people think of mindfulness meditation as a brand name. It's this guru's purview, or that guru, Thich Nhat Hanh, or, you know, a particular teacher is teaching it, so they think of that teacher. And there are a lot of different teachers that have different methods. I'm just sticking to the pure ancient stuff. I'm not calling it mindfulness meditation, but I don't see that it's any different from Vipassana or anything else. It's a method of bringing your mind inward, you know. And I know there are, TM is another system that has a specific system, but they all come out of this basic Vedic teaching, I think. Did you have something, Matt?
I did.
Yeah.
So a lot of us do have this idea of yoga as being poses and using our body. So could you say, what is the reason we do these maneuvers and poses to get into this state? Because you didn't talk about the physicality leading to this.
Yeah, so. Yeah, the poses. Yeah, for sure. The body is made to move. It's not made to stay still. And so, actually, this comes back to self-denial that Katie was talking about. Now we're getting to it, yeah. So the idea of holding postures and seeing how long you can hold postures. Ideally, it should be how long you can hold a posture comfortably with long, smooth breathing. And if you aren't comfortable and your breath isn't long and smooth, you shouldn't be holding that. So this is what I teach. This is the tradition that I teach. But over time, you may find that you can stay in that pose a little longer with comfort and long, smooth breathing. Okay? Maybe only 30 seconds the first month, maybe a whole minute the next month. It's a very gradual process. So asana is about training the mind to pay attention to what's happening right now in the present moment in your body, okay? So many people play music and have other distractions, and many people hurt themselves. Because if your body only wants to stay there, you have to be able to listen to the cue coming from your body. But if you have ego and you have ambition, and you want to do this fancy pose longer than anybody else or better than anybody else, and you push yourself, then you're going to hurt the body. And hopefully, you will learn a lesson from that. yeah, so Pat says we're out of time. I have one little thing I was going to read to you that I thought of. So let's just do this final meditation before going out. Oh, actually, this was supposed to come before the... So we'll just... You'll take it, okay. Just take a deep breath and come to the place. Come into the place that is yours alone to visit. Return to yourself and dwell in the silence, the knowing, and the peace at the center of your own true self. Thank you. Let's have coffee. Namaste.